Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons and Dragons. And today we're talking about Zariel. One, two, three, four.
Hey, Brad.
Hey, Will.
How you doing?
It's cold in here, but the space heater's moving.
Yeah, it is quite cold in our studio Wonderland over here.
There's a rain ambiance. I wonder if the mics are picking it up.
I hope it is, because I love rain ambiance.
Yeah, and, in the summertime it's fan ambiance, and in the wintertime it's rain ambiance.
So, it's a new year, Brian.
Shit.
And
what?
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And a new year equals a new theme, and so I'm happy to announce... Welcome.
Oh, I'm excited. I don't know what it is. What is it? Just kidding.
You know, I know what it is. Welcome to 2022, Year of the Fiend.
Year of the Friend. What? Yeah. No, wait. It's the Year of the Fiend.
Fiends are friends, not food.
Fiends are friends, not... Wait.
No, they're not friends. They're definitely not friends. We're going to talk about
it
today.
We only have one fiend that's our friend.
So this year... Yes, and he's more than a friend. This year, we will be taking the time to cover the many varieties of lower plane dwellers, be they demon, devil, ugolith, or other type of fiendish denizens. And today, we are starting with one of the Archdukes of the Nine Hells, a fallen angel of Celestia, corrupted by the Blood War and her own hubris, Zariel, Lord of the First, Archduchess of Avernus, and the First Layer of Beator.
Nice.
Yeah.
We've talked about her lightly.
Tangentially,
before.
A little bit, yeah. I think back when we did the Nine Hells episode, which was like 50 years ago, it was before Zariel had kind of got published in 5e. So I think at that time I had announced Bell as the ruler of the First, who he was at a time.
Uh-huh.
But it, almost immediately after we did that episode,
yeah,
the new lore
came out.
Rolled right in. So we're about to amend some of that. So Zariel is the Lord of Avernus, the First Layer of the Nine Hells, and the front lines of the Blood War on the devil side of things, anyways. Mm. As such, she is predominantly dedicated to fighting and winning the unending blood war between devils and demons. She was originally a solar angel of the seven heavens, the highest order of angel on par in power of that of a demon lord, before transforming into an archdevil and falling to the Nine Hells. She is through and through a warmonger obsessed with battle. She lives for the fight and judges others exclusively on their combat skills and their willingness to use their combat skills.
That's interesting, that second part.
Yes. Okay. She prizes zealous fury as much as discipline and training and leads her armies from the front with an unbreakable resolve, leaving all in her path in ruins as she carves across the battlefield. It is plain to all who witness her on the battlefield that the Archduchess is both reckless and rash, relying on her troops' berserker rage and their own determination rather than her strategy and training to win her fights. So she's very angry, she's very passionate about being angry, and she uses that anger to kill relentlessly.
She's just barbing. She's
yeah,
a barbarian.
She's a barbarian. She's a barbarian.
She's a flying angel barbarian from hell.
Now from hell.
From heaven, now hell.
Yes, exactly.
Ooh.
Zariel's original angelic form was that of a beautiful solar with flawless skin and blue feathered wings, long blue hair, and a blindfold covering her eyes. In this form, she once wielded the legendary sword of Zariel, which is pretty cool if you ask me. Of like, if your sword is legendary and it's just named after you,
I was gonna say
it's pretty badass.
It's a little pretentious, don't you think?
That's a running theme with her.
The sword is me. I am the blade.
Right. The whole pride is kind of her downfall. It's kind of her thing. But the Sword of Zariel is a sentient longsword made of celestial steel and capable of blinding fiends with its celestial light and cutting through even the hardest of materials.
Ooh.
After her descent, though, she took on a more diabolical appearance. A halo of fire now burns atop her head. Her once fine skin is scorched and marred, and her angelic wings are ruined by flame. They're leathery and charred in appearance. Her blindfold was abandoned, revealing eyes that glow with white-hot rage, and she has lost the hand that once wielded her holy blade and has now been replaced with a long chained flail.
Oh, so
she's, yeah, she's pretty fucking heavy metal.
She's
like, I don't need a fucking hand. I just need another weapon.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, don't put another hand back
no.
on this. on this bad boy. I'm sure she could have gotten a new hand.
Yes, she very well could have. This was a choice.
Yeah.
This was a choice, Brian. So as a solar angel, Zariel originally served under the command of the Morning Lord Lathander, deity of creativity, dawn, renewal, birth, athletics, spring, self-perfection, vitality, and youth.
Okay.
Zariel's name was said to mean companion of light. From the seven heavens of Mount Celestia, Zariel was tasked with tracking the progress of the Blood War in Avernus. But the continued exposure to the conflict in the plane itself caused Zariel to develop an obsession with the war and an undeniable taste for battle. Zariel, already naturally impetuous in nature, couldn't ignore her deep desire to fight, but regardless of all her appeals to enter the fray herself, her requests were consistently blocked by her angelic peers.
Okay, so this is starting to track. Like, you have this, like, war-obsessed creature, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, like, made to fight on the front lines of the Blood War, which there's three participants in the Blood War, right? There's the Devils, the demons, and the angels, right? They all fight the Blood War?
No, there are three participants. It's the demons and devils primarily, and then the Eulyths are the third leg, the mercenaries between.
Yeah.
And then
I thought the angels play a part in it.
The celestial forces play a part in that they're heavily invested in observing, and they're heavily invested in it never ending.
Yeah, okay. And that was my thing, was like, okay, well, if it never ends, like, it's easy to get obsessed with it. You're like constantly, forever, all eternity,
exactly,
have to be about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. But I think, like, Zariel's superiors are basically, they're of the opinion that, like, no, the Blood War needs to forever continue lest, like, evil, you know, rule the day.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So if it's not going to maintain its self-containedness, then it obviously will expand out.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Zariel, in her hubris and pride, feels like she can actually, like, win the war.
Yeah, okay.
So she wants to get in there, and they're like, no, you don't understand the plan, though.
So it's just a fire.
She's like, no, I understand the plan. It's just a shit plan.
Yeah, I'm going to fuck it up. I can just go in there and fuck it up, though.
So, yeah.
Does she talk like that?
Absolutely. That's absolutely how she talks. So Zariel refused to be thwarted, though. She believed that it was the responsibility of the angelic host to defeat evil first and foremost, and was of the opinion that an assault from the host of Celestia could wipe out both sides of the Blood War in one stroke, freeing the multiverse from the fiends who destroyed each other and vast chunks of it in the process. Zariel was frustrated by her superior's refusal to engage in the war and drew the line when Yinagu, the demon lord of slaughter, did what he does best and slaughtered a mortal settlement under her protection.
And hang out in his yurt.
Yeah, that too. She directly intervened, both defeating and casting the demon lord back into the abyss and opening herself up to punishment.
Oh, wow. Okay. To defeat Yinagu and his horse.
Oh, yeah, she bitch slapped that fool back into the abyss. Like, she's very strong. She's very powerful.
I was thinking about the vocal for her, and I was thinking, like, this kind of reminds me of Kerrigan from StarCraft a little bit.
And, okay, that's an interesting parallel. I can kind of see where you're coming from there.
Spoilers for fucking StarCraft I guess.
It's StarCraft 2, I guess.
StarCraft 2, yeah. Because Kerrigan is like a Terran general or
she
commander
was.
Of some kind.
That changed pretty quickly.
Right. She immediately becomes a Zerg. So, like, spoilers for that is like the basic premise.
Well, she becomes like queen of the Zerg, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
All right, anyways.
Yeah.
Emboldened by the success of her independent intervention, Zariel took her ambitions a step further by defying her superiors and leading the Hellriders, a host of personally trained mortal allies, into Avernus. This battle became famously known as the Ride.
Okay.
Outnumbered by the devils, the army was defeated and the survivors were sent fleeing in terror and shame. Asmodeus sent a delegation of bone devils to retrieve Zariel's unconscious body from underneath a mountain of the dead, whereupon the Lord of the Nine allowed her to recover and congratulated her on her power and her conviction.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. He knew all the right buttons to press with her.
Uh-huh.
Zariel, before the Lord of Hell, and with his silver tongue whispering in her ear, succumbed to the corrupting nature of Hell, and Asmodeus made her an archdevil and dubbed her his champion.
Yeah, I am pretty dope, huh?
Yeah, he stoked her ego, which is, that's her problem, is her pride is all-consuming.
Yeah, you got Asmo in there. He's going to say the right things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. By the very nature, the Outer Planes exude a penetrating influence on those who dwell there. We've talked about that quite a few times. Mm-hmm. When you're in... whether it's an upper plane or lower plane, like, your nature is
imposed upon.
Imposed upon.
by
and,
like, the
you have to make saves. Yeah,
yeah. Like if you're going to go someplace lawful, you'll find yourself being more lawful.
Or, exactly.
Like, subjected to the whims of law.
I right. guess. Exactly.
The whims of law. That's a weird phrase. But, it is. Okay.
And the nature of Beator is to corrupt, and in Avernus in particular, the plane specializes in the abuse of a flaw that frequently affects angels in particular, hubris.
Mm.
Angels have a sense of infallibility and superiority about their actions. And Zariel's anger was only further inflamed by the righteousness with which she perceived it. Asmodeus praised her for her strength and her convictions, but it was her unswerving rage that had cemented her downfall. She had become so zealously hell-bent on fighting that she was willing to abandon her principles and sacrifice the very innocent lives that she had sworn to protect in order to destroy the demonic menace.
Hell-bent.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like and Asmodeus, you know, he pounced. He knew totally. It was time to strike. So the exact timeline of Zariel's fall from grace and subsequent rule over Avernus is up for debate. Some reports claim that Bel, Beator's most powerful pit fiend, was the previous lord of the first. Others have Zariel as his predecessor, who he later overthrew. Regardless, Bel at one point did manage to defeat Zariel and take her place as the Archduke, only for her to do the same back to him.
Nice. immortal people.
Yeah, weird, immortal, right? Drama, really, is all it is. So after Zariel's fall, her behavior became warped to match that of her infernal peers. Zariel is a cruel being who enjoys inflicting psychological torment on her enemies and subjecting those that displease her to horrible fates. She has grown jaded, cynical, and distrusting of all others to the point of being taken aback by a heroic act of self-sacrifice exhibited by righteous mortals. I think part of that might be because of all her... Remember, she came here with the Hellriders, right? This was like her personally trained army of like the most righteous dudes around.
Yeah.
And they sucked. They got here and they fell apart. And so she's like, now if she sees someone actually pull it off, she's actually shocked by it. I can't help but think that that's a major factor.
Yeah. Just blinded by it. Just like totally overwhelmed by the fact that like we couldn't do it with our badass squad. And like here's some rando party of five level 15ers.
Exactly. Banged
it out.
Absolutely. All right. So now a true Archduke of Hell, Zariel endlessly plots and sets multiple nefarious schemes into motion at once and deals in contracts to bind people into her servitude. You know, like a devil. While once a purveyor of blind justice, Zariel's zeal has been twisted into a rage-fueled vengeance. She's now incapable of forgiving even the smallest slight against her.
Yeah, just some kind of tyrant.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of anger.
Yeah, tyranny is the name of the game here in Beator. Despite this, Zariel's rule over Avernus is in some ways less fierce and brutal than Bel's reign previous to hers. It is a tight ship held together by fear, and when met with treachery, Zariel brings swift and terrible retribution. Zariel is notorious for her foul temper, her poor emotional control, impeding her ability to act rationally and pragmatically. This is exemplified by her refusal to play politics with the other Archdukes or even the other prominent powers of Avernus. Like, she doesn't play those games.
Yeah, like, she's just trying to go fuck shit up, right? So, like... Yeah. If she's out on the front lines, you're going to expect to see her out there.
Yes, most definitely. Go ahead.
There's no plan. She's just going to go out there and be strong.
That is one of her problems, is there is no plan.
Well, also, like, I don't know. It plays
to her strength. Like, it's the way she gets stuff done. It works for her.
Yes, and there's
but
no
it comes
way,
with pitfalls.
I was going to say, the enemy can't expect... The enemy is demons.
Yeah,
so,
like, they don't expect nothing. They don't give nothing. A fuck. They're, like, they are chaos.
They're out doing the exact same thing she's doing.
Yeah, it's true. I will say this. It's important. I think it's important to take into account that Zariel's fall is very interesting in that, like, her fall was very much a choice, and that, like, she... feels like the most important thing to do on a cosmological scale is to rid the world of demons.
Yeah, okay.
And she was an angel, like someone basically designed to exterminate demons, but she wasn't allowed to do so, right? So she chose to become something else in order to do what she feels is like her calling. And like she's doing the fuck out of it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Infinitely.
Yeah, infinitely. So, many Avernian denizens are power-hungry warlords roaming the wastes and infernal machines looking to create and expand their fiefs. Zariel has opted to let these pests destroy each other rather than personally exterminate them, given her busy schedule of blood war prosecution. She has a particular arrangement with Mad Maggie, a powerful night hag obsessed with the tragic saga of Zariel's fall. The deal being that Maggie keeps the other warlords in check, and Zariel will allow her to... alone will leave her alone and tolerate her investigation into her past. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Is Mad Maggie, is that the third layer? Is she like one of the It's just some random hag.
This is a night. So night hags love to muck about throughout all the lower planes, and right. including Avernus. In fact, there was a night hag who was an archduke for a temporary amount of time. I think it was over the layer of Malbolge.
That's okay. I think that's what I'm thinking.
Now Glazio, Asmodeus' daughter, has.
I see. Okay.
But so yeah, you're gonna find night hags throughout this area. Mad Maggie is a particularly powerful one mm-hmm. who's like one of these like warlords upon the plains of Avernus.
Yeah, like if you got a name in D&D,
yeah,
then you strong.
You somebody. Yeah. You somebody for sure. And I don't know. The idea of Mad Maggie really reminds me a little bit of Granny Goodness from Darkseid, Superman. She's like Darkseid's major general. Yeah, she runs the Furies.
God, what a weird character.
Yes, very much. And like when I was reading about Mad Maggie, I was like, oh, it's like Granny Goodness.
She's like wearing like a dominatrix style like leather. Yeah, and some definitely. Of the more
yeah,
stuff.
Definitely. I mean, Darkseid's World Apocalypse is basically Beator.
Yeah, that tracks. Okay. Yeah.
So Zariel relishes the slaying of demons and does so personally when the opportunity presents itself. She's even I knew this was coming. She's even defeated
Katsuchi.
Katsuchi.
It's like a Katsuki.
The Demon Lord of Wrath.
Yeah.
He's the demonic patron of the Frost Giants, in fact. And she defeated him in single combat, stole his hammer, and chained him to the bottom of a chasm in Avernus, since killing him would simply cause him to go back to the abyss.
That's a good solve. That ass.
Her approach of charging headfirst into the dangerous situations led by her righteous wrath is the opposite of the previously careful and calculating Bell. He is, at heart, a realist, fully aware that the infinite nature of demonkind leaves the forces of Avernus only capable of a stalemate against their innumerable horde. Zariel, despite her cynicism, is an idealist. She genuinely believes that she can lead a victory over demons and wipe them out from the cosmos. Now, I don't know why she really believes this. Like, this really is very telling of her pride, because it's just, like, they're infinite, bro. Like, it doesn't end. You know what? She's never seen the abyss. That's what it is. She's never been there.
Have you not? Yeah, they probably were like, don't look at it. It'll look back at you.
Right, exactly. But like, yeah, like her entire charge was to watch over Avernus, right? And from there, she's like, well, the devils are keeping them a stalemate. And like, we could take what's happening here. Like, we could totally take it on. But maybe she's not really realizing how infinite the abyss really is.
Yeah, she's like, I can go down there and fucking cut it at the root or whatever.
Right, but she's super wrong.
I don't know what the root is. It's so deep.
There is no root.
It just keeps getting deeper.
Despite this idealistic view, Zariel still has to face the real day-to-day challenges of the war itself. Prosecuting the Blood War constantly taxes Zariel's armies. Her legions are constantly being depleted by the ceaseless fighting. To keep hell in the war, she aggressively recruits mortal souls and looks for evildoers on the material plane who are willing to bring her more, thus ensuring her more infernal soldiers.
Must construct additional pylons.
Indeed.
I don't know the one from the Zerg anymore.
I don't know it either. And the methodology of Zariel's lead soul harvesters is both diabolical and violent. Zariel's cults flourish in mortal regions racked by war, and her agents effectively act as war profiteers, sowing corruption by destroying harmony and stability, thus setting up the right circumstances for mortals to perform heinous deeds. Mm. These warmongering cultists give mortals the means to harm each other by funding evil organizations and distributing weapons and inciting hatred between them by coercing them into acts of sectarian violence justified by the need to defeat some arbitrary enemy.
Okay.
So she's into some like political astroturfing bullshit here.
I was
like,
wondering
pretty
what,
crazy.
When like the tie-in to like material and souls and mortals is going to come up, and like how she's funding her
exploits. She's doing it through like crazy subterfuge and propaganda and shit.
Oh, it's if souls in D&D are power and currency for people like this,
yeah,
or creatures like this,
yeah, she's still a person.
Does that imply that there was like this much soul when the universe began?
You know,
and that it's being distributed here and there, because like when they get souls, they keeping them souls.
True, but souls also get used and destroyed too.
Okay,
the soul in D&D isn't technically eternal. It can be consumed.
It's an energy source.
Yeah,
it's an energy source. It's power stars from Super Mario Odyssey. Power moons.
I guess so, maybe.
They use that shit as gas.
I never played Odyssey.
They use that shit as so power moons are just power stars, but like they look different. Like,
yeah, sure.
Like shines from Super Mario Sunshine.
Never played Sunshine.
Same thing.
Yeah.
They're all just power currency.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
They literally are putting them in their cars.
I could. Devils literally do that. They have machines run on soul. So yeah,
they're just like raiding Mushroom Kingdom.
Yeah, absolutely. Asmodeus is Bowser, confirmed. Zariel's worshippers are most often those that wish to fight but lack the necessary experience, training, skill, talent, and bravery in martial affairs to do so, all of which her agents offer them. Her newly indoctrinated cultists show greater ferocity than before, and her cult leaders have a keen tactical eye. Mm. So very effective. Those that wish to prove themselves on the battlefield, those who seek fame and fortune through military achievement, and simply those who desire the skills needed to survive are also attracted to the cults of Zariel. On the more experienced side, militant conquerors, already established warriors desiring a combative edge, and hobgoblins, specifically, that escape the goblin-named Pantheon of Maglubiet are also typical members.
Okay.
Even entire orders of knights, fighters' guilds, and mercenary companies can fall under the sway of Avernus's Archduchess.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
It is.
I like you, Zariel.
She's very, very intriguing.
She's so mad, though.
She's so mad. Zariel desires the souls of the greatest warriors and expects only the best from those under her command. She allows her devoted to live out relatively fuller lives than other cult patrons, if only so they can hone their skills in life and join her ranks of universally disciplined and capable servants in death.
Nice.
So she wants them to get properly trained because she needs them properly trained.
Yeah, when you get to Avernus, you need to be able to fuck shit up.
Exactly. Like, I think a lot of devils, like, that is super not effective. They just need souls for a couple reasons. Number one, for their own machinations, but number two is pretty much every archdevil has a quota that they owe Asmodeus.
Yes.
So they just need them. They just need them flowing in. They don't care about the quality of soul. It's just get them in. Like, no, she's very much more selective. Like, she cultivates her souls and makes sure that they're the best that they can be when they come in, because she's immediately going to throw them into the meat grinder.
Yeah, and they have to be. Well, that's good, because then you know what to expect from each, like, round of souls. Like, you,
right.
And you could be like, oh, that batch wasn't so great. Maybe I'll stop plugging that particular fighter's guild.
Yeah, sure. Actually, you know? Yeah, I'm sure that there is a bit of discernment like that.
She comes up like, you have fallen out of favor. She starts flailing the fuck out of everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's going to send these souls to Asmo.
Those mortals who please her while alive are sometimes allowed to keep their memories and be promoted into higher forms of devils rather than become pathetic lemurs.
Mm. Hey, wasn't there a soul channeling thing that happened to send like soldiers to the front lines? Or is this just Zariel's kind of thing? Like, you need to keep the demons at bay. You figure it out. Or are, like, the other devils, like, funding her campaign with their souls?
So, unfortunately for Zariel, like, she's on her own.
Okay.
And it's a give-and-take thing. It's like, she stays out of politics because she wants to, and that's fine, although the other archdevils don't really like her for that. Mm. But basically, no one fucks with her. Because yeah. She's the front line.
She's busy.
Exactly. She's busy, and she's not going to fuck with you, and you gain nothing by undercutting her necessarily.
Right. You need her to do what she's
exactly.
doing.
Exactly. So, like, she's, in a lot of ways, in some ways, she's very secure in her position.
Yeah. She's, like, the perfect weapon. She's, like, the perfect front piece.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
All pawns.
Right. All pawns.
All pawns up front, baby.
Let's take a short rest.
Okay. Hey, folks. I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms.
and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
This episode of the Dungeon Cast is sponsored by The Adventurer's Guide to the Bible. Cleopatra is dead, and Rome and Parthia struggle for world domination in this immersive historical setting for 5th edition. Your adventure begins with a search for the three missing magi, but will bring you into conflict with enemies both human and supernatural. Featuring legendary locations from history, including the Hanging Gardens of Babylon and the Library of Alexandria. This module goes live this Thursday, January 6th, on Kickstarter, and early bird pricing is available for the first 25 backers. We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're back at it again. Check out our Patreon. It's got stuff on it.
It does.
We're doing a lot more stuff this year. There should be a new item. Have we done that?
Have we done what?
Have we updated the item? The merch stuff?
Yes, it's totally updated.
Oh, shit. Yeah, nice. Absolutely. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
Cool. I actually haven't seen any of it. I need to go look at it.
As a matter of fact, there's multiple new items, because I kind of spread it across the tiers. So different tiers get different items.
Do you have to do the sticker?
I'm not sure. But the higher you go up into the tiers, the more items you're getting.
Nice. So, there's like a sticker at the $10. It was the Year of the Giant logo. We should update that.
We should update that one. Okay. I might have. I don't remember.
I know, but a bunch of people...
By the time you see this, it will be updated.
Yeah, we get the email that says, like, people are going to get merch. So, yeah, like, absolutely. I know it's happening.
All right, well, back to Zariel.
Yeah.
So, Zariel holds a deep disdain for governmental machinations and political maneuvering to such a degree as to refuse to make alliances of any kind with those who will not fall in line with her crusading agenda.
Fuck your bureaucracy.
Exactly. This, as well as her origin as a celestial, has, of course, made her a political pariah among her peers. The other archdevils would happily depose her if given the chance, and many have made moves to do so in the past.
Oh.
Her recent return to prominence has set off the paranoia of Dispater, Lord of the Second Archduke of Dis, in particular, who shares a border with the Archduchess.
Dis what? Just kidding.
Dispater, already the most prudent, overly suspicious of the nine Archdukes, has retreated deeper within his Iron Tower of late, and Mephistopheles, wary of her wrath and aware of the value in having the might of Zariel on his side, has sought to gain some sort of leverage over her, but has thus far failed. Asmodeus himself actually admires Zariel's passion for warfare and effectiveness at waging the blood war. And that's one thing that's very true about Asmodeus. He appreciates competence because he himself is like competence incarnate.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
If you are very good at something, he's like, impressive. I'm into it.
He's Darth Vader, like, you failed me for the last time.
Pretty much,
he's gonna fucking kill you.
Yes, absolutely.
He knows Zariel's worth. He put her there.
Yeah, so, he put her there on purpose. Yeah.
I get why other people are pissed off about it. They can't manipulate her.
Right. Exactly. She doesn't fit into their world paradigm.
Right. She sees a DMV and destroys it on sight.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. He has openly welcomed her into the fold of the Archdevils. The angel turned fiend is no doubt something of a jewel in his crown. Mm. And that's another thing, too, is like,
I did.
Yeah, look what I did. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, fuck you guys up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck you. I'm the best.
Without a doubt, though, Zariel's most direct opponent is Bell, former Lord of the First. Bell is a pit fiend and considered a military genius, specializing in misdirection and defensive tactics, in contrast to his successor's berserker rage. Despite instructions by Asmodeus to cooperate, the two utterly revile each other. Big surprise. Mm. And it is likely Asmodeus planned for this dichotomy, a win-win situation for him. If they are always a threat to each other, they will be too busy undercutting each other for either to advance their own influence anywhere else in the Hells. If they somehow manage to get along, they would likely be an unstoppable force against demonkind, and Asmodeus could then place them in command of the forays into the Abyss to expand the influence of lawful evil.
Oh, so they want to go take land.
Well, my point is, like, he put them in the situation, so, like, if they can never get along, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
It keeps them neutralized.
But if they do,
they'll be super focused to the point of, like, all right, well, we're good here. Let's move into the abyss.
Okay. Yeah. Wage the frontline war on the abyssal plate.
Exactly.
Avernus.
Exactly.
Okay.
Instead, though, the two archfiends continuously invent distractions to avoid having to deal with one another. Zariel has placed Bell in charge of weapons production to keep him busy, but unfortunately for her, it does nothing to stop his treasonous scheming against her. Since Asmodeus directly supports Zariel's rule, Bell cannot directly challenge or defy her, so instead he takes every opportunity to make her seem incompetent.
Sure.
Specifically, he allows and encourages her to continue her reckless maneuvers in the hopes she will at some point overextend her forces and be removed from her station due to a major defeat.
Okay, I was going to say, it's probably really hard to do that without her just
He's got to be really subtle or whatever. Right, exactly. Tiamat, the Dragon Queen, who also dwells on Avernus, has a complex and hostile relationship with Zariel. Zariel at one time was held as a prisoner by the Dragon Queen when Bell had temporarily deposed her. Bell, in his Dark Eight, captured and dragged Zariel to Tiamat for safekeeping. Tiamat was likely not merciful due to the fact that Zariel had once sent her agents to steal from the Dragon Queen's treasure hoards for war funds. And you don't steal from a dragon's hoard, no. Especially not Tiamat.
That's a tempting thing, though. That's why everyone's always like, constantly trying to break in.
I know, and it's right there, and she's fighting this fucking war, and Tiamat's not helping.
A dragon is just a vault, and everyone thinks they're fucking Brad Pitt and George Clooney.
So true. In fact, it is said that Bell used Tiamat to siphon Zariel's powers to increase his own infernal abilities, and that Zariel was constantly tortured by Tiamat's Abishai servants, who continuously carved off bits of her flesh to feed to Bell for several centuries. Mm. The new Lord of the First hoping to eventually reduce her to a mere soul shell.
Okay.
On the other hand, Zariel actively attempts to assist Tiamat in her attempts to escape the hell by assisting mortals with aligning goals. These attempts to free her, however, are made only because Zariel is unable to kill the Dragon Queen, and so seeing her leave Avernus is the next best option.
Okay.
So please just go. Get out of here.
The manipulation of mortals from a devil perspective is almost like there's a soul in there, and I just have to like talk to the shell outside of it, and eventually it will be mine.
Right.
It's basically mine already.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Zariel does have allies, though. There was once a mortal knight named Haruman who served as one of Zariel's Hell Riders. Haruman was a heartless crusader even before his descent that transformed him into a Hell Knight of undying loyalty to Zariel. Zariel is also served by a Death Knight named Olanthius. Olanthius also served Zariel when she was an angel, but he took his own life when faced with Zariel's corruption and what he was driven to do in her name. Unfortunately for him, he was brought back to serve her while supernaturally bound to her. Though he hates her, he partially blames himself for not seeing the warning signs to her fall.
So he kills himself. His soul goes to Avernus.
Yeah.
Like, because he was under her command?
No, basically she cursed him or someone cursed him. It's not very clear. I'm pretty sure she cursed him and binds him into service. She
ghost-busted him.
Yeah, she ghost-busted him, turned into a Death Knight.
Dope.
Yeah.
Okay.
Following her fall, she was enhanced with fiendish powers, such as the typical archdevil ability to alter their forms. In addition, many of her powers have gained a distinct fire motif. She can create fireballs and walls of fire at will, her weapons sear with hellish flame, and her magical stare can cause spontaneous combustion.
Ooh.
Whereas typical solars have the ability to cast resurrection 3 times a day, it can remove ailments such as disease, poison, blindness, and deafness with only a touch. Zariel instead now has the power to cast Finger of Death 3 times per day. It is endowed with a horrid poisoning touch that inflicts the same conditions that an angelic healing touch would reverse.
Let me heal that poison.
Oops.
I touched you.
Yeah. Among Zariel's most dangerous weapons, though, are her flying fortresses, massive basalt citadels that are usually repaired and serviced at the rusting Stygian gates. You know, is it Stygian or is it Stygian?
It's Stygian.
Okay. Stygian docks, and refueled by souls extracted directly from the river Styx.
Like, so she's just throwing castles at people?
Well, kind of. The castles fly in,
yeah,
and they're firing off spells and launching demons.
Yeah, they
got devils.
Like cannons or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, sure.
But you were talking about, what were you talking about? Them using souls for fuel?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In Mario. In Mario. Right? Well, that she docks her flying castles and drinks up from the river, sticks some souls, and that's how she fuels the flying castles.
Fucking soul diesel.
And you know who else tends to have flying castles? Bowser from Mario.
This is just, it's like... Oh man, Bowser's just a blend of devils.
Yeah, but devils and turtles. God, he's a turtle devil.
He's so bad though.
I love Bowser.
He sucks.
One such vehicle is a colossal structure shaped like a blade, a 450-foot tall fortress, crewed by hundreds of devils, and can be controlled telepathically only by Zariel herself.
That's like 140 meters.
It is. The seat of Zariel's power is a massive basalt citadel that spans an area of 5 square miles. Its walls are ornamented with the partially burned bodies of those that disappointed the Lord of the First, many still screaming and moaning in dying agony, audible from up to a mile away.
What's that, like 1.2 kilometer?
Something like that.
I don't know. I'm from America.
The citadel is manned by hundreds of various devils, both inside and out, and protected by high turrets that reinforce the walls. The region surrounding the citadel is also altered by Zariel's magic. 10-foot-high gouts of flame burst from the ground 60 feet apart from each other within 1 mile of the fortress, as well as sight-obscured smoke that clouds it between 500 feet and 2 miles away, and the smell of charred meat and screaming voices that can be perceived from up to 9 miles away.
God damn.
Within the bounds of this lair, Zariel can create more fireballs as well as major images to frighten her enemies. She has a particular preference for images of loved ones being burned alive.
Dude.
She's really mean. She's just really fucking mean.
And she's doing high-level shit.
Yeah, she is.
She's doing really high-level magic. Absolutely. Like illusion magic. That's kind of interesting. I never thought of like an angel doing illusion magic.
Well, she's not an angel anymore.
Oh, yeah, I know. But
that's
like,
a good point.
Like, her power set is, like set from the angel version and then, like, manipulated.
It's kind of reversed.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, now she's telling lies.
Indeed. Yeah, there you go. Mm. So, fun fact, Zariel is mentioned in the story of the trial of Asmodeus as being the angel who demanded to be heard and cut to the front of the line, which caused a brawl with her fellow angels. Asmodeus watched with a smile as the brawl became a battle before Primus demanded order, scolding the angels for infighting, presenting Asmodeus with a ruby rod to ensure his adherence to the law.
I kind of remember this. This kind of
we talked about in the Asmo episode.
Piece of her corruption story, right?
It is a little bit, and I'm sure it's the moment Asmodeus kind of got his eye on her and was like, "Uh-oh, I think I see one."
He's like, "I'm going to warm in them holes in that armor. I'm gonna get in there."
So that's all I have about Zariel.
Oh shoot,
we do have a stat block.
Oh wow, we gotta look that up.
Yeah, you want to read it?
I do.
Let's do it.
Do we have it?
No, we're going to have to look it up.
We're going to go look it up.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
Okay. All right, we're back.
Indeed, we are.
I got the Zariel stat block.
Indeed, you do.
This image, this thumbnail from D&D Beyond of the... I call them thumbnails now. of this... I do not see a flail hand. I see a spear.
Okay,
and a sword.
So yeah, that's a great point. That is the first artistic rendition from 5e of her before
Descent. She had a flail hand.
Well, before Descent into Avernus was written, which kind of like... flesh out a whole lot more of her lore. If you want, go ahead and Google Zariel, D&D 5e, and that's the art piece you were just looking at. That's the only one that looks like that. The rest look different. They look.
Oh
like,
yeah, here's the front page image.
Do that? No, the one right next to it. That's like the official image of her.
Oh, the Forgotten Realms. Ooh, yeah. Oh, that's a long flail.
Yeah, it's a long flail, and she looks drastically different. She looks way scarier.
Yeah, some vampire vibes going on. Some Nosferatu in the face.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. A little bit.
Yeah, I like the wings better and with the flames on it. It reminds me a lot of the, god damn it, Diablo, right? I think there's actually a like late game you get like wings, angel wings that look like that. They're like kind of mechanical looking almost, but they like burst fire.
Yeah, I like the look of the fire wings too, but you know, I like the idea that her wings are marred and leathery. It just makes her seem so much more, I don't know, like she really has fallen.
Yeah, okay. So. Some Raven Queen kind of feeling going on here. Okay, and let me get to the stat block.
Yes, let's talk about Zariel's stats because she is very powerful.
We got a large fiend, devil, indeed. Lawful evil, all tracks. Everything's on board. Hashed out the flail hand. We got it. Armor class is 21, natural. So it's just her body.
It's just her body. It's very strong. That's extremely high AC.
Like a barbarian.
No.
On unarmored defense, right?
Yeah, but like even a maxed out like 4/4. That's
I don't mean the numbers.
AT, yeah. Well, I guess yes,
I
like
just
a barbarian.
Mean like the way a barbarian, a barbarian do.
Yeah.
580 hit points, which is large. That's a lot.
That's a lot of HP.
50-foot flying speed. Or I'm sorry, that's a 50-foot walking speed and 150-foot flying speed.
Why would she ever walk? But if she did, she'd go walk faster and better than you.
For intimidation purposes, yeah, I think. Absolutely. She's going to walk better than you and angrier. Isn't that like the kind of fly speed of like, what are those?
That's a dragon's fly speed, I'm pretty sure.
No, well, an ancient dragon, huh?
I think so, yeah.
I was going to say those elemental titans.
Like an Elder Tempest and a Phoenix?
Yeah, those have 150 fly speed, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
We got 27 strength, 24 dex, 28 con, 26 intelligence, 27 wisdom, 30 charisma.
So her lowest score is a 24?
Yeah, and it's dex. That's probably like the worst score to have that.
It's not low. She's got a plus seven to it. No, it's not low, but yeah.
Like in comparison to the others.
Look at that AC, though.
It's so strong. Yeah, maybe that's what's making her hittable is her quote unquote low dex.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Okay. We got saving throws, intelligence is plus 16, wisdom plus 16, charisma plus 18. My God. Skills are intimidation plus 18, perception plus 18. Yeah, mm-hmm. that tracks. Mm-hmm. Damage resistances.
Everything.
You're gonna take half from cold, fire, radiant, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non magical attacks that aren't silvered. Immunities are necrotic and poison. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Condition immunities, charmed, exhaustion, frightened, poisoned. Cannot exhaust her.
All pretty standard for like things of this magnitude.
Right. That's why Belle's like, I gotta make you get far enough ahead so that they can get behind you.
Right.
All right. We got dark vision. Surprise. Of course. Hey, guess what? 120 feet of it though. That's a lot. It's like twice the amount.
Yeah. As far as she just doesn't have true sight, but whatever.
Yeah, maybe she's too mad to see truly.
Maybe.
Passive perception's 26. She speaks every language, all of them.
And telepathy.
Telepathy of 120 feet. That's just like psychically commanding my local troop to go do whatever.
Right, exactly.
That's so terrifying.
Yeah.
Challenge rating is 26, 90,000 experience.
So for reference here on the
plus 8 proficiency bonus.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Reference here for the how impressive the challenge rating is. Demogorgon's the most powerful.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Yeah, shout out to Demogorgon. He's the most powerful demon lord. His challenge rating is 25.
The most powerful fiend.
His challenge rating, according to the books, is 25.
Oh, no, that's wrong.
Zariel is probably the weakest of the archdukes, and her challenge rating is going to 26. Like, this is how the Blood War has stated stalemate. Is devils really are magnitude stronger than demons most of the time.
Oh, yeah, because they're not infinite. Infinite.
No,
they're not infinite.
They're very finite.
So Demogorgon's challenge rating is actually an 8 sideways.
Absolutely it is. Absolutely.
Okay. We got devil's sight. That's the kind of eyes you get when you are, you know, hanging out with Satan.
Oh, she can see through magical darkness.
Yeah, magical darkness does not impede Zariel's dark vision.
Nice.
It's so supreme. It's the best dark vision there is. Yeah, why doesn't every player have it? They will eventually.
They will 5.5e
will implement devil's sight on every
player.
On all
characters.
Every single one. What is nighttime? No one knows. Fiery weapons. Zariel's weapon attacks are magical. And when she hits with any weapon, the weapon deals an extra 36, 8d8 fire damage.
Goddamn.
Included in the weapon's attack below.
Mm-hmm.
Innate spellcasting. Zariel's innate spellcasting ability is charisma, which means it's insane. It's just insane.
Mm-hmm.
Spell save DC 26. She can innately cast the following spells requiring no material components. At will, alter self can become medium when changing her appearance.
Why? Why would she ever?
I don't know. Maybe she. Yeah.
I guess to fit through doors.
Some doors you can't blast open with your fucking strong arms.
Or you
arms.
Can, but you want those doors to remain there.
Sometimes I don't want to tuck my wings that way.
Yeah, sure.
I just shrink down.
Uh-huh.
Okay. What else we got? Detect evil and good, fireball, invisibility on self only, and wall of fire, which is a very good spell.
Do you think she ever uses detect evil and good? I mean, it's nothing but evil in all directions. Like, what's the point, right?
Insight is a wisdom-based skill. She has plus 8 to wisdom stuff.
The only way she's casting that is if she's looking for someone good, right?
Yeah, or like they're hiding behind, what is it, like a foot, an inch of lead or whatever the fuck it is that stops like her super sight.
I don't think that's a thing, but sure.
Well, maybe they're like hiding behind some shit and she's like, oh, I know they're good. Pop that off. Now
yeah.
I know where you are.
Right.
It's fucking... alignment radar. Three times a day, she can blade barrier, Dispel Evil and Good, and Finger of Death.
Yep, absolutely she can.
Give you that little stinky pinky.
Oh, no.
Legendary resistance three times a day. If Zariel fails the saving throw, she doesn't.
Yeah, she doesn't. Three times a day.
She just doesn't.
Yep.
That's how this game works. Mm-hmm. Magic resistance. Zariel has advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects. That's cool.
Yep.
Okay. Super barbarian. She's not easy to take danger down. Sense. Just that.
Yep.
Regeneration. Zariel regains 20 HP at the start of her turn.
You have to keep taking the HP down because it just keeps going back up.
And you cannot exhaust her. She's inexhaustible. If she takes radiant damage, this trait doesn't function at the start of her next turn, much like a troll when it gets hit with fire.
Did you just compare Zariel to a troll?
It's written the same mechanic.
Okay, all right.
For sure. Yes. Yeah. trolls are nasty if you don't know that.
I mean, trolls are nasty.
You can't, this is really hard to fight if you don't have the data.
I just can't imagine what Zariel's reaction to that would be.
I'd be dead before. Yeah. I'm doing a podcast in the name of Demon Gorgon. So.
It's true.
Zariel dies only if she starts her turn with 0 hit points and doesn't regenerate. Much like a troll.
Zariel. She's basically a troll.
Zariel, a big, nasty troll. Winged troll with fire. That likes fire a lot.
Yeah. Not like a troll at all. Not like a troll. In that regard. All right, what are her actions?
I wonder what that's like. I remember this radiance. No.
I imagine it's tinged with shame. A shame of her fall.
I'm not going to regen. I don't feel like it. Stop hitting me with that, man. You're making me stop bringing up my past.
All right, tell me about her actions. Sorry, God damn it.
Okay, so we got the multi-attack. Zariel attacks twice with her long sword, not her stinky finger, or with her javelins, which I do see in the
art. What about her mace? What about her flail?
Right, well, maybe
that should be rewritten.
Maybe we'll get there.
That's not lore correct.
No, I don't think it is, because there's nothing about the flail here.
She lost her sword.
I would substitute javelin stuff for flail.
Yeah.
Maybe she uses the flail to wrap around javelin and like fucking whip the javelin out.
That's adding a lot of extra steps for no reason.
Yeah, it is. okay, longsword is a melee weapon attack plus 16 to hit, reach of 10 feet. Oh, one target. She has the same reach as a bugbear. she's going to do 17 or 2d8 plus 8 slashing damage or 19. 2d10 plus 8 slashing damage if used with two hands, which she does not have. So yeah, this is not lore correct. She has to whip the flail around and use that as the second hand. Okay, so you can do plus 36, 8d8 fire damage. I wonder if there's like DMs that go out there like, oh yeah, she uses it two-handed, and the players are like, you just told me she got a fucking flail out there.
Exactly.
And they're like, no, no.
It's all falling apart.
No, it can't be. It's a fucking mage.
Yeah, that needs to be eroded. I don't know why it's not. But anyways, continue. Yeah, I mean,
we're in D&D Beyond, so this is up to date. So we got a melee or a ranged weapon attack with plus 16 to hit, reach of 10 feet. Oh, did I say this was a javelin?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, good. Or range 30 to 120 feet. One target, it's going to hit. For 15, 2d6 plus 8 piercing damage, plus 36, 8d8 fire damage. That's so much redundancy to say fiery weapons up front, and then just like, yeah, it's included in every...
Yeah,
in
it's every, all your shit is
I
fire.
Guess they're just saying why, like with fiery weapons, right? Or maybe there's some way to turn off fiery weapons? I don't know. Horrid touch. Stinky finger. Recharge on 5 to 6. Zariel touches one creature within 10 feet of her. The target must succeed on a DC 26... Constitution saving throw.
That's really high.
Or take 44. That's not 4d4. That is 4-4.
Okay. 4t4.
4t4. Or 8d10 necrotic damage. And be poisoned for 1 minute. Which is a long time when you go into the time suck of D&D combat.
Yeah, it's true.
While poisoned in this way, the target is also blinded and deafened.
Goddamn.
That sucks.
You're poisoned, blinded, and deafened.
Shit, that's a stinky fingy.
No,
the target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on itself on a success. She can teleport. Zariel magically teleports, along with any equipment she is wearing and carrying, up to 120 feet to an unoccupied space she can see. She's like Mega Man. When she defeats an enemy, she like gains their power, and when she defeated Inagu, she got to teleport. He teleports like crazy, right? I remember that being a thing.
He does. Yeah, I do remember that. He teleports like crazy.
Yeah. She's like, I defeated the Reploid Inagu.
I understood the reference.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Legendary actions?
Yep, we got those. Zariel can take 3 of those, choosing from some options.
That she's got. It looks like she's got 2 options.
yeah. immolating. I thought that was with an E. I hate vowels. Fun fact about me, I hate vowels. Immolating gaze costs two actions. So that kind of accounts for, it's like three. Mm-hmm. So Zariel turns her magical gaze toward one creature she can see within 120 feet of her and commands it to combust. Wow. The target must succeed on DC 26 wisdom saving throw or take 22 or 4d10 fire damage and then teleport. She uses her teleport action. So
basically, once around, she's going to light your friend on fire and teleport somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing's going to stop her from doing that.
Or she's going to teleport somewhere and light you on fire.
Yeah, true that. Yeah.
Let's just show up behind you, hit you with a stinky finger, and then your friend explodes. Yeah. Dope. That's it. we've got lair stuff. You want me to read that?
Yeah, sure. Let's hear about her lair
stuff. Yeah, Zariel makes her lair in a basalt citadel that rises up in Avernus.
I told you all about it.
From nearly a mile away. Do we need to read this?
Well, lair actions is really what we need. We know her lair is a basalt citadel. What are her lair actions? What
There's
can she do?
There's devils of all kinds crawling all over the structure, ensuring that no intruders breach the defenses. Anyway, lair actions on initiative count of 20, losing initiative ties. Zariel can take a lair action to cause one of the following effects. She can't use the same effect two rounds in a row. Mm-hmm. She can cast Major Image four times at its lowest level, targeting different areas with the spell.
Okay.
That's a powerful spell. That's a really, really powerful spell.
You got to be clever with it, too, though.
Yes. Yeah. And she's really smart. So.
Well, she is, but the DM has to be in this case.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to tell them that it, they have to see through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're just going to tell your players, like, you see X, Y, and Z.
There's a field of flowers. There's rabbits all over it. They're on fire. All of them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Zariel prefers to... Herengons, they're dying. Zariel prefers to create images of intruders, loved ones being burned alive, like Herengons, which I love dearly. Zariel doesn't
Fields of rabbits.
Yeah. Zariel doesn't need to concentrate on the spells, which end on initiative 20 of the next round. Each creature that can see these illusions must succeed on a DC 26 wisdom saving throw or become frightened of the illusion for one minute. That means you can't go towards it. Can't move towards it, right?
Yeah.
A frightened creature can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on a success. And then also Zariel casts her innate fireball spell.
Mm.
Regional effect. The region containing Zariel's lair is warped by her magic, which creates one or more of the following effects. The area within 9 miles of the lair is filled with screaming voices and the stench of burning meat, which we covered. And then once every 60 feet within 1 mile of the lair, which we also covered, 10 foot high, gouts of flame rise above the ground. Any creature or object that touches the flame takes 7 2d6 fire damage, though it can take this damage no more than once per round. The area within 2 miles, but no closer than 500 feet of the lair, is filled with smoke, which causes the area to be heavily obscured. The smoke can't be cleared away. If Zariel dies, these effects fade over the course of 1d10 days. If you kill Zariel in her lair, in her
basalt citadel?
Yeah, or her level of Avernus.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She will die for real, right?
And yes.
Not be repopulated.
Yeah,
not respawn.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Why would she ever go here to her place to like give orders, because she's inexhaustible and she could just like go fight forever?
I mean, war is more than just like wherever she's at.
Yeah,
so she has to have a command sister. Yeah, she has to check on Bell. People answer to her. She's dealing with more than just the actual combat. There's logistics and news and all the other stuff and terrain. Yeah, and
I bet the bubble of abyssal stuff like gets crazy and then she goes out.
Exactly.
To deal with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah. Any questions about Zariel?
I know Zariel has entered the battlefield.
Yeah,
that'd be a scary prompt.
It would be. Oh,
you're
yeah.
Just like a
oh
fucking,
my god.
You're a fucking.
I'm gone. Bye.
What's the fly one?
Fly.
The demon.
That
looks like a fucking long mosquito beak.
Chasme or
the
chat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that shit's like, fuck, turn around.
Yeah, exactly. That's back. Exactly right. So I got one last thing about Zariel. It's that it's spoilers for Descent into Avernus.
Spoilers for Descent into Avernus.
Yes.
A adventure module based
Indeed.
In hell.
Yes. You do have the option of attempting to redeem Zariel, where
Ooh.
She can re-become a solar angel.
Ooh.
I'm not too keen on the details of it, but because of that, I don't know where this lands canonically speaking.
I get it.
Usually, like, adventure modules, like, a specific ending will get canonized upon the next edition. So essentially, it's like Schrodinger's cat. Like, Zariel is both an archdevil and a solar angel simultaneously until we open the box and find out next edition.
Yeah, that's right. Is the cat awake or asleep? Yeah. It is both.
Yeah, I think it's actually alive or dead, but...
I read my kid quantum physics books.
Oh, do you now?
Yeah, but they're written for children.
That's awesome.
And so it's awake or asleep, Will.
Yeah, of course. I'm sorry. My apologies.
What is sleep but the cousin of death?
It's very true, actually. What was I saying? Zariel might be a solar angel now. We just don't know it. But
when you say the next edition, do you mean like 5.5 is going to lock it down?
All I really mean is the next time they address the situation.
So the next book about Avernus will have the canonical.
They'll have to say. Have to say what the deal is, and then people will know, okay, canonically, then she never was redeemed. She stayed, or she was redeemed, and now Belle's back in charge, or whatever.
Put in the situation of a party. Mm-hmm. Like making the decision to help redeem her or kill her, I guess, is the alternative. Or just leave her
I guess so. I never played the module.
It's almost like
one of those three, right?
Hey, are you going to be chill or do we have to fucking put you down?
Right.
Like that?
Maybe.
Okay,
I don't know.
So let's present three options then.
Yes.
Redeemer. Well, would you redeem? I guess it would be redeem or kill, because, like, why would you leave her a devil?
I think the only reason you would leave her is if you thought the alternative was worse. Mm. If you thought the alternative, someone else stepping in, was worse. Which, maybe you could argue that. Belle is technically more evil than her. You really don't like Belle. So I could see leaving her in that regard. As for redemption, I don't know. Redemption is a tricky thing when it comes to, like, whether one deserves it or whether one deserves grace and the story you're trying to tell. I don't know enough about the module, but from what little I do know, Zariel doesn't seem to deserve
a second chance,
or the second chance that she would deserve probably shouldn't be becoming a celestial, almost god level thing that has all this power and can do all this good. You know what I mean? Whatever she wants.
Spoilers for Keanu Reeves starred Constantine. Like the DC movie that came out a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love that movie.
Reference on the show in a long time. It's one of my favorites.
I love it.
I think I've mentioned top five movies a lot recently on this podcast, and Keanu Reeves is in a couple of them. Because Constantine is, I think it's a really well done,
it's a very good movie.
So at the spoilers for this, so at the end, Gabriel is the angel that is turning, right?
Right.
And she does get a second chance, but as a mortal.
Exactly.
They strip her wings.
Right.
Like, that's a cool option.
Exactly. And that's how I think it would probably, narratively speaking, be more satisfying.
Go prove yourself in the moral world.
You can be redeemed, technically, but, like, you're going to have to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
You're not just, there's not just going to be a moment where you grab your sword and you're like, no, I don't want this anymore. And now you're an angel. No, fuck that shit.
Save me, God. Yeah, wait, who's in charge of Celestia?
So technically the person in charge of Mount Celestia is Zafkiel, I'm pulling up knowledge that I haven't messed with in a while. He is a member of the Hebduad. He's the leader of the Hebduad.
Okay.
Which are they are essentially like super angels.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of remember
in charge
super
of each layer, but they're not gods.
Right, okay.
And Zafkiel is essentially like the power level of like an Asmodeus, like a greater deity, but he doesn't have worshippers or anything like that. He's outside
he's a
of that.
God?
He's not a god. But he's at that power level for sure.
Oh, okay.
No worshippers, doesn't grant spells, doesn't function like a
just
god.
Just hella strong.
Just hella strong and manages the lawful good plane and saves the souls of babies. That's kind of his deal.
Like Larry the Lobster.
What?
SpongeBob.
What?
Super strong, saving babies.
Yeah, sure. Like Larry the Lobster from SpongeBob.
I don't know why I thought of Larry the Lobster.
It's like long rest time. Yeah. We are so far off.
Sleepies.
Yeah. Taking a long rest.
Okay.
Just outside the studio, ranking members of the Cult of Demogorgon and founders of the Dungeon Cast fan club, Grimly and Gromly, conspire to send their demonic master pertinent information to aid and abet toward the victory of their true patron, Demogorgon, in the Blood War. Shout out to Demogorgon. Let's listen in.
That was a very good episode. Very informative. A lot of information.
Yes, the boys are very good at their education. Yes,
they're quite good.
The Dungeon Cast is good.
Demogorgon will be proud.
Indeed.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Yes, okay. Now, if I calibrated everything correctly, we'll get precisely 1 minute to.
Only 1 minute?
Only 1 minute. That's all I can do right now, but we've got to send our recap. to the boss.
The cliff notes.
He needs the cliff notes.
Okay.
So let's do it.
What?
Are you ready? I'm going to turn the thing on.
Okay. What are we telling him? About Zariel.
I turned it on.
About
Zariel. Yeah. Oh, God. That's what the episode is about. Go.
Zariel. She's a stinky finger.
She's really big. She's really, really big.
Her fingers smell real bad.
She's got leathery.
She's so... So are they, angry.
Are they fiery
very,
or are they
very
leathery
angry.
Wings?
Yes.
I don't know. And was there a hand or was there a flail?
Definitely flail.
It was a flail,
no
right?
Hand.
You're right.
No
was
hand.
She whipping the javelin out?
She,
all crazy,
she
right?
used to
still?
Be an angel.
Maybe she kicks the javelins.
She might be an angel again. We're not sure.
A lot of fire. A lot of fire. And she can make your loved ones on fire.
She really likes doing that.
But fake and for real? Did I get that? Why are you laughing? We only got a little bit of time.
Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. I'm getting distracted.
What else? It's gotta be something
there
else.
There wasn't a lot more. She kind of does three things.
It's just Belle. What are we
fire
worry about Belle?
Smells bad and she's mad.
She's making weapons. She's
yes,
mad.
But he's not in charge anymore.
Well, she's not wearing armor. But I saw the picture.
She
not
is armor.
She's not naked. I checked.
Good. Good
yeah,
on you for checking.
Do we have anything else we need?
No, I think that's all he needs.
I didn't start a timer. Was that a mission?
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the long rest. This is the part of the episode where, we recap. What are we doing? Welcome to the year of the friend.
Of the fiend.
Of the fiend.
Of the fiend.
Year of my friend.
Where we're talking about a lot of fiends this year. It's going to be a lot of fun.
A lot of fun, friendly fiendishness.
Very excited for this slow but sure formation of the Dungeon Gaz Zodiac. We have the Year of the Dragon, the Year of the Giant, the Year of the Beholder, and now the Year of the Fiend. Eventually, we're going to have 12 of these bad boys, and we'll release a calendar.
Oh, shit. Yeah. And you know how I'm going to be dressed when I take my photo shoot.
Oh,
thanks
no.
for that. Get me in July, baby. Swim trunks.
Indeed.
Or less.
If you guys want to promote what we're doing here, check us out over on patreon.com/thedungeoncast. We got a bunch of cool stuff, and it helps keep the light on and helps us make new projects.
Yeah, it's going to help us soundproof this area we recorded now because like there's hella problems.
Yeah.
It's just the general environment.
Indeed.
But there's something we can do about it, and we're going to use Patreon money to do it. So thank you guys so much for supporting the show and helping us make improvements and upgrades. We do other projects like Super Quest Saga, which is an actual play podcast set in space. You can check that out. It's on hiatus, but we'll be back.
Yeah, we'll be back very shortly after this episode drops, in fact. End of January is what we're aiming for.
Yeah.
I think we're in the final 10 episodes here. The story is coming to a crescendo, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we got Twitter, we got TikTok, I got Instagram. It's BNDND. You can find me on there.
Indeed.
I'll post some stuff today.
We also got a merch store. If you guys want to support your DungeonCast fandom, go ahead and check out spreadshirt.com/thedungeoncast. And you should be able to pick out a jacket, a shirt, a beanie, a hat.
Stickers?
I think
hella
we
stickers.
Got stickers. We got tote bags. We got all kinds of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff on
there. We got a bunch of cool designs. It's not just our logo, although our logo looks really cool.
Nine hella stuff.
There's like characters from Super Quest Saga. There's What the Grumps. There's a few other things. So go check it out.
And thank you for a wonderful Year of the Beholder. And thank you to the fabled story legendary Hobbleman. Yes, that one.
Yes, that one.
That one. You did an awesome job. I meant to montage his Beholder creations. Guess I got to do it on this episode.
Sure. Yeah, go for it.
Hey, check this out. The video is changing. There's creations of Hobbleman.
And you
thank
can see
you.
All the Beholders that we concocted in our minds and drawn by Hobbleman.
Thanks for doing that, man. That was really, really cool. It was a lot of fun seeing
Indeed.
Them all come together. I'm sure the final one is going to be, you know what? I don't think I've seen the final update.
So it's good that you haven't done it yet.
Yeah, so it's good that I haven't done it yet. It's a great way to transition from the end of last year into this new year of 2022, DungeonCast Boogaloo, as we're calling it. Friendly, fun, and fiendish.
Definitely fiendish.
That's the tagline for this year.
Fiendish, fiery, and...
Fiery.
Fucked up.
Fucked up. fearful. Fiend. You're the fiend.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye. We're calling it a game. That's
calling
what
it a game. Bye.
We're calling it a game because it's a podcast about tabletop games.
Up? The camera's not even on.
The camera's not on. Sit back. Sit down.
Dungeon Cast.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.